Okay, good evening, folks. Tonight we learn about Voltaire and the Jews. So last week we spoke about Johann Eisenmenger and Judaism Unmasked, Entdeckung des Judentums, which was a compilation of all the unpleasant things that might be found in rabbinic literature or other Jewish literature that could paint Judaism in a bad light. Well, Eisenmenger's book was steeped in theology and arguably was becoming obsolete even in its own time, in the sense that this was a moment of budding rationalism when people are beginning to think along logical lines and divorcing themselves from the theological baggage of the past. The movement of rationalism had its breakthrough between 1680 and 1715, a spirit of criticism, examining all things with detached human understanding and regarding man's prior understanding of things as being inferior and the product of imagination and delusion. So we're really trashing on old-fashioned religion here, aren't we? Now, rationalists did not just address theoretical matters. They also wanted to change real-world conditions in Europe. And the emancipation of the Jew was one such change. From residents tolerated on the margins of society to citizens with full political rights. That's what's going to happen to the Jews. This was impossible, or rather, this transformation of Jewish status would have been impossible had the old line conception of the Christian state remained in place. But as times change, the nature of the state changes, and maybe the fate of the Jews can change too. Rationalism subverted Christianity and Christianity's ability to judge Judaism unfavorably, meaning we're a great religion and you're a terrible religion. And why? Because we say so. The rise of the secular state is possible, and religious affiliation no longer should matter in determining what are the rights that you will be receiving from the all-powerful state. Everybody should be on an equal playing field because the doctrines and the dogmas no longer matter. There's no religious test, or at least there shouldn't be in a secular state. Now, all this should be good for the Jews, or at least good for the Jews who want to have emancipation. We may talk about at some point in Eastern Europe those Jews who didn't want emancipation, those who, when Napoleon came marching through Poland, those who, the rebbes and the rabbanim who thought that Westernization was terrible and we'd rather be under the boot of the Tsar. That's not for now, but the point is, in theory, emancipation is a good thing. The transformation of the thinking behind the state would be good for the Jews. However, not all is good. In targeting Christianity, rationalists also would attack Judaism. Why? Well, two reasons. One, because they knew about Judaism and they knew about the literary sources. And if you have an axe to grind against religion generally because you think it's all superstition and baloney, well, then you're going to target every religion that you encounter. And yes, the Catholic Church may be the dominant one in France or the Anglican Church in England, but you see there are Jews here, you know about Judaism, so they'll attack that too. But there's another reason why, and that is because by attacking Judaism, you help undermine Christianity in the sense that Christianity is built upon the foundation that is Judaism. By attacking the Old Testament, you can topple over the daughter religions as well. Now, by extension, if you mock Judaism, then you'll also likely have an unfavorable attitude towards the bearers of Judaism, namely the Jews. Doesn't always follow, but you can imagine that it would typically follow. All right. Now, others did not find fault with Judaism. So I'm not here to say that every rationalist thinker of the early 18th century, in the 17 teens, 20s, 30s, was a raving anti-Semite. No, in fact, some had favorable approaches. But
those are probably the ones in business with Jews.
Not necessarily. Sometimes personal interaction did not decide the other guy's attitude towards Jews. You could have a raving bigot who never really encountered a Jew in the flesh, and you could have the opposite. You could have someone who loved Jews, who interact with them even if it wasn't such a pleasant experience. Now, in subsequent generations, some secularists would oppose emancipation because of the inferiority of Judaism, not because they're doctrinal Christians, who feel that Judaism represents the rejection of Jesus and all that stuff. No, just on some so-called objective measure, Judaism was found wanting in the moral sphere, in the ethical sphere, in the aesthetic sphere. We're going to see Voltaire finds Judaism wanting in every respect, okay? And he's no dogmatist. No longer a theological point, merely elitism against the lowly Jew. The denial of revelation and historical criticism took down the perceived reliability of the Bible. This is a key point. It says in the Bible, oh, do you believe it? In the old days, the answer was instinctively yes, because everybody was a theist and everybody was a believer. But we're now entering a phase where just because it's Shteitn Pasuk, it doesn't mean you're a believer or you think that it happened. Some took a positive view of the Bible, even if they weren't absolute believers. John Toland regarded ancient Judaism, okay, very favorably. Others not so. The deists of the 17th and 18th centuries in France and England were a mixed bag. Deists tended to see Jews as students of other peoples, meaning if revelation is not real, then where does the substance of performative religion come from? You made it up, or you didn't make it up. Somebody else made it up, and you copied them. So what are some examples that, at least in, you know, the 1720s, 30s, and 40s, they're going to say the Old Testament is a borrowed faith. Give me an example. Bris was borrowed from the Egyptians, they'll say. And we'll get to immortality of the soul was borrowed from the Zoroastrians. Okay, so deists will say that the moral law is innate and requires no revelation, and that anything that comes from purported revelation is an unsolicited interference in natural religion. That all the good stuff you could figure out on your own, and all the shtusim is what you claim came from revelation. Now, what in Judaism is along those lines? The notion of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Because although the fundamentalists will say, ah, there really was a revelation to B'nai Noach, a careful examination of the sources and of the historical record would indicate that the rabbis came up with Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach well after the fact, on the basis of what they thought a rational person could deduce.
Okay. So would that be a question of the state of nature, why you won't go out and kill your friend,
rather right.
than saying God said so?
Correct, correct. So what are some of the things that have to be rethought in light of this approach of denying revelation? Well, the killing of idolaters and the killing of the seven Canaanite nations. Okay, the Kanani, the Chiti, Amori, Perizi, Vusi, Girgashi, what's supposed to happen to these people? It's curtains for them. Is that fair? Is that right? Can we justify that on 18th century rationalist terms? We probably can't. Okay, good. So the fact that we're not doing it is going to be a defense of Judaism against Voltaire's criticism that he will ignore completely the Talmudic watering down of biblical faith. That doesn't interest him at all. And Eisenmenger would say it was never watered down, because I could point to a Gemara in Ksubis that says kill all the goyim. Right. Okay. Now, what are some of the other examples where it might be time to rethink the morality of this biblical episode, at least in the eyes of the deist of, you know, London of 1730? The answer is Vayinat Sluat Mitzrayim. They despoiled Egypt. Now, even in the Gemara, we find that the famous court case in the court of Alexander the Great, where the Egyptians come suing for all the money and the gold and the silver, and the response is, but you didn't pay us for 400 years. Okay, so they run away. But the despoiling of Egypt. What else? David's election as king and the perpetuation of the Davidic dynasty. After all, the sin of Bathsheba and Uriah Hachiti, you know, he did pretty bad things. Akedah and Yiftach. What's the problem with that? Human sacrifice. Now, granted, in the case of the Akedah, he didn't go through with it. But still, the fact that it was commanded, this strikes a very negative chord.
But human sacrifice was an accepted modus.
Okay, good. So that's going to be a reason for a deist who has been reading this with a malevolent hermeneutic to say, you're right, other religions were terrible, but this one is too. And since we're talking about this one, let's talk about this one. That's what they would say.
Maybe you could say also they weren't around. Nobody, there was no Astarte worship or anything like that in the 18th century.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the Bible, according to this view, should be rejected. Its believers should be pilloried and its influence removed from society. So two very important British or English deists of that time are Matthew Tyndall and Thomas Morgan. In their view, Christianity is natural religion, while Judaism is superstition. Well, how convenient. You say all the good stuff comes from Nazrut, and all the bad stuff comes from Yahadut. That they wanted to sever the New Testament from the Old Testament. In one respect, Morgan is an intellectual descendant of Marcion. If you remember Marcion from previous lectures, Marcion Christianity was a heresy. It tried to essentially jettison the Old Testament altogether and reject the Jewish roots of Christianity. But unlike Marcion, who wanted to replace the Old Testament with a de-Judaified Christianity, which is a revealed religion, Morgan wanted to replace that with natural religion, but never abandoning the name Christianity. Key point. It'll be natural religion, but we'll still call ourselves Christian. Why do they want to do that?
Because of acceptance by the population?
Correct. Because after 1,500 years of Europe being a Christian continent, it's hard to escape the terminology. The public identifies as Christian. So when you come up with some new idea, you can't throw out all the code words.
But what about the baggage of the host, the Virgin Mary?
That's they want that gone. They want that all gone. Yeah. Okay. Now, all that is good in this version of things begins with Christianity. All that is ugly has its origins in Judaism. But it wasn't contemporary Jews who were influencing this perspective. It was the Jew in the abstract that is telling them, well, all that is ugly must be Jewish. These ideas would not influence public opinion at the time in the 1750s in England. They would prove relevant a century later and elsewhere in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, and 90s in continental Europe. But in 1753, there was a debate going on in England over the naturalization bill. What is the naturalization bill? So the answer to that is the Jews who came back to England in the 1650s under Oliver Cromwell, the days of Menashe ben Israel, and they were foreigners whose legal status was always a little bit dubious. If you were born in the country, you could become a naturalized citizen, still with limited rights because you couldn't serve in parliament because you had to swear an oath of a Christian. It wasn't until one of the Rothschilds entered parliament in 1858 that it was no longer necessary to swear the oath of a Christian. Yeah.
So is this more popular with the masses?
No. This is for the intellectuals, and I'll explain how. So in 1753, there was a bill up in parliament. The question is, if you were born abroad, but now you were living in England and you want to have rights as a citizen, could you attain those rights? And the answer is, under this bill, you could, by special act of parliament, distinct for each individual person, not for the Jews broadly, but for each individual person, a separate act of parliament and a lot of kesef, you know, thrown in the government's way. So the government passed this bill and then repealed it very quickly. Why was it repealed? So the question is, was this intellectual, rationalist anti-Semitism, or was it still a holdover from medieval times suffused with all sorts of religious bigotry? What do you think? The old one. Unambiguously, it was the old one. The Jews are a doomed people, dishonest in business, the specter of a country suffering under Jewish takeover. Well, the deist thinker has his reasons for not liking the Jew, and we'll get to all Voltaire's reasons in the next couple of minutes. They were very small number, yeah. Now, so all this was based on stereotypes and not based upon interactions with real Jews. This is Eisenmenger revisited, all the old canards from medieval times. Some mentioned Jews and deists in the same breath, because both groups are deniers of Jesus. How do you like that? No. So the idea that Jews are going to be lumped together with deists is an interesting accusation. If you're a defender of traditional Christianity, I understand why you'd lump the two together. Anybody who doesn't believe like me, the traditional Christian, is now going to be anathemized. Whether he believes in some clockmaker, you know, the clockmaker version of God, or he believes in, you know, Torah Misinai and Moshe Rabbeinu. The presence of Jews, it was believed, would only increase the number of deists and atheists. Now, let me pause for a second. That criticism has a lot of truth to it, though. This is the dirty little secret. Who were some of the major players in the atheism of the last two centuries? Jews, okay? Very much so Jews, whether of the communist variety or the ethical culture variety or just the indifferent variety. Yeah, Jews play a major role in contemporary atheism. Okay. Now, one deist, Philo Petrae, was probably a Jew, but it was a pseudonym. He was probably a Jew, defended the Jews on deistic grounds. So there was occasionally someone who would write a pamphlet from this rationalist perspective, not looking to trash the Jews. In England, the public read the Old Testament without Jews present. This is an important point. Jews were expelled from England in 1290. They don't come back to 1654, and there are not any large numbers of them until well into the 19th century. So most British subjects don't really see or interact with Jews, or at least not a lot of them. But they were reading the Bible because it wasn't a Catholic country, and they had access to the vernacular translation. Now, with that in mind, the heroes of the Bible are not identified with contemporary Jews. And as such, when the deistic criticism of the Old Testament arrives, it doesn't carry with it an anti-Semitic thrust against contemporary Jews. So Avraham is not Avram. Abraham of the Bible and Avram on the street are two different entities. They're not co-equal. So if you attack Abraham of the Bible for sacrificing his son on Mount Moriah, it doesn't have to mean that you have to, you know, bludgeon the guy Goldberg who lives next to you. But things would be different in France, different country, Catholic country. The history of the Jews there, totally different. Okay, now let's go to Voltaire. So Voltaire did more than any other man to shape the rationalistic trend in Europe that would ultimately improve the conditions and the status of the Jew. That's a mouthful. It basically says, if not for the rationalists, and Voltaire is the chief rabbi of the rationalists, then the Jews would never have been emancipated. So on that point alone, do we owe Mahakara Satov? Maybe, something. But now let's go to the downside. Yeah. So he was a self-professed deist who tried to undermine the church and make tolerance of opinion prevail. He waged war on Roman Catholicism and on its power within the French state. So he didn't like the religion generally, and specifically the hold that the Catholic Church had over the French state. He ridiculed Bible stories, especially the miracles. So Krius Yamstiff was a particular bone in his, the thorn in his side. The French deists went much further than the English deists in attacking the church and in their aspirations for social change. Voltaire explained the history of civilizations through a naturalistic lens, not a theological one. As such, the Jews are not predestined to play any important role. We as Jews like to think very highly of ourselves, that we're Am HaNivchar, the chosen people. We're going to go back to Kibbutz Golios, land of Israel, or Lagoyim. There's a lot of, there's a big role for us in our own version of the history of the world and the future of the world. But even for your average Christian, they thought that the Jew was relevant to the grand scheme of things, some outsized relevance, much more so than the Mongolians or the Koreans, okay? But for Voltaire, no. The Jew is no different from anybody else. Maybe he's a scoundrel as a matter of, his moral scruples, but in the grand scheme of things, there is no grand scheme of things. That's the whole point. There is no grand scheme of things. So the Jews don't have to play any particular role.
Now, isn't the Christians,
right? Not necessarily, and he'll explain why. So because Voltaire really hated the church, and the Jews are the origin of the church, he has difficulty maintaining objectivity in discussing Jewish history. So his ethical compass is pretty solid. He doesn't have double standards. So we're going to see that, unlike the Europeans of today who hold Israel to a different standard than they hold other countries, that's not going to be Voltaire's problem. His problem is his understanding of the Jewish past. Now, to avoid the censor, Voltaire had to pretend that he believed in the divine revelation of Scripture. So on the surface of it, he would say, well, you know, we believe in blah, 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 but he didn't believe in anything. He thought that certain countries were very good. He loved the Chinese and the Japanese. Why? And the Buddhists.
No Christian Western religion.
Right, because he thought that their culture represented natural morality, natural religion, and it was not sullied with silly doctrines about Jesus and Virgin Mary and all the resurrection, none of that stuff.
That doesn't mean it didn't exist.
He just didn't know about it. Right. So he, from 10,000 miles away, is able to speak favorably about a culture he knows very little about. It probably had its own Mishigasin, but he doesn't care to talk about that. He just wants to say, well, they don't have Christianity, so it must be wonderful. Now, Voltaire subjectively preferred Greco-Roman sources about the origins of the Jewish people over the Jewish sources. Now, remember, the first four or five lectures we had this series was about what? About what the Greco-Roman writers said about the Jews. And what were some of the things that they said about the origins of the Jews? Why were they kicked out of Egypt?
They were sick.
They were sick. They were lepers, this and that. All sorts of stories from Manetho in Egypt and from the clergy there. So Voltaire doesn't want to believe the plain reading of the book of Exodus or the book of Genesis. He wants to believe what some Greco-Roman writer wrote, which is nasty stuff about our people. So as far as he's concerned, the patriarchs and maybe even Moses never existed. That Abraham is not our grandfather, because Abraham never was. He says there was no Exodus. The Israelites were a nomadic Arab tribe. They were cruel and genocidal. Now, Voltaire's point, regardless of the historicity of biblical tales, was to impugn the moral compass of whoever wrote these tales and of anyone who believes in them. That's a key point. So let's assume for the moment these stories never happened. All right, but if they didn't happen, someone had to make them up. Here's this. If they didn't happen, somebody had to make it up. But who would make up such a thing? It's so terrible. And who would believe such a thing? It's so terrible. The Jews. Right. Okay, so.
So Jesus did exist to him or not?
Presumably, yes. But the miraculous occurrences that are mentioned about him in the New Testament, Voltaire would throw in the garbage. So he regarded biblical heroes as being guilty of cruelty and deceit, and especially sexual promiscuity, which he had a big problem with. He did not like the polygamy of the Avot, all right? And he condemned Ruth HaMoaviah for her charms in seducing Boaz. Batishkav Margalotav, he picked up on the book of Ruth, yes.
Because in the book of Ruth, the Farish, it doesn't say
it. Doesn't say it, but it hints at various tactics. Okay, now, Voltaire rejected the idea that the deity would command purposeless acts or impose a penalty for non-compliance with purposeless acts, like Sabbath observance. He accused Judaism of human sacrifice. So he picks up on the Akedah and Yiftach and says, this is a common occurrence. Now we would say, but Yitzchak lived. And maybe Yiftach's daughter went to the nunnery and didn't actually get killed. But he says, no, there really was human sacrifice. Voltaire judged ancient civilizations by certain criteria, four criteria: morality, reasonableness, aesthetics, and the ability to sustain a proper political system. So morality, he says, well, the patriarchs were polygamous, and they killed the seven Canaanite nations, and they had human sacrifice. So on morality, bad. On reasonableness, they don't wear shatnez, they don't eat pork, they don't do this. Why? There's no reason not to. It's not reasonable. What about aesthetics? He says the Jews made no contribution to arts and technology and the advancement of human progress. Now, wait a second. Wasn't there a Beis HaMikdash? Yeah, but it was built by Hiram Melech Tzur. How do you like that? The Haftorah from recently. Okay? That Hiram of Tyre was hired out, no pun intended, by Solomon to build the temple. Yeah. So now, what else? The fourth was political issues. We'll get to that in a second. But on the issue of science, he says the Jews, when they're sick, they don't go to a physician; they go to a priest. What's he talking about?
Kohen.
Metzora and the Kohen. The Kohen checks the Metzorah. Okay? Now, as for... And he really doesn't like that because he says it reinforces superstition. It's bad enough that you think there's a religious reason for your sickness, but it's further compounded by the fact that the priest, the ecclesiastic, will tell you that that it's so. Now, as for the political issue, he says the exile of the Jews twice from their land is a sign that they cannot sustain a viable state. Is that a fair criticism? Well, it's a criticism. It's a little bit fair. It's true. I mean, the bottom line is we're a little people, and we didn't hold out against the Romans, against the Babylonians, against the Assyrians. I mean, we didn't do too well. So the Jews never had a strong army or good commanders, as far as he's concerned. Now, that's a little bit taking it too far, because the Jews did put up a good fight against the Romans, despite inferior numbers. Yeah. Now, they learned trade and money lending, not soldiery and statecraft. So here he gets into the typical stereotype of the Jewish economic profile, that the Jew by nature goes to the money angle and not to be the valiant soldier or the Henry Kissinger, all right? No statecraft.
But he goes back to the time of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really think Elephantine was nothing but a question of... hired army people.
Bear in mind that he doesn't know a lot of this stuff. How learned is he in the history of the Jews? He didn't read Hebrew. Despite the use of certain Hebraic terms in his writings, he did not read a word of Hebrew. And we have access to 200 years of academic Jewish studies that post-date him. So I don't know what he knew. You know, he maybe read Josephus, but... You don't need to be a big chacham to write a nasty book. Right. Now, Voltaire, though himself ambivalent about immortality of the soul, thought that it was essential at the practical level for keeping people within moral balance. Now, there are a lot of people like this. They may not personally believe that there's anything after death, but they think that society as a whole needs to think there is. Because if they don't think there is, they'll all be vildachayas and ishet re'eu chayim b'la'o, like it says in Pirkei Avos. So he said the Old Testament should be faulted for not subscribing to immortality. Now, does the Old Testament subscribe to immortality? Ha'omer ein techiyas ha'mesim in ha'Torah, ein lo chelek la'olam haba. Now, that's what the Mishnah says. But why does the Mishnah have to say it?
Because it's not in the Old
Testament. Right, because even though because we're told to believe that it's in the Torah, and we have to be told that because it's objectively not in the Torah. Okay, now, Jews could have learned this from other civilizations who did subscribe to it in biblical times, and yet Voltaire is saying, well, they didn't bother to. So Jews were inferior in every possible way, as far as Voltaire was concerned, culturally, religiously, ethically, socially, politically. But he extends this negative assessment beyond the biblical period. He extends it to the Second Temple period and even up to his own times. He doesn't draw chronological distinctions. There's no periodization here. Now, in the study of history and historiography, periodization is like the be-all and end-all. You have to know we're going to study from this year to this year because that's a distinct period, and then we'll go to the next period goes from this year to this year. To him, it's all gemished. It's all one long thread, and there's no difference substantively between one kufa and another, one era and another. Now, he's wrong. There are real differences, but he doesn't want to see them. So if he can find flaw in one tkufa, in one period, he'll apply it to all of them. As far as he's concerned, Israel has permanent bad features throughout the ages, not changing despite the Jews' wandering and dispersions. Sometimes Voltaire would draw historical distinctions between various eras, but most of the time not. And when he doesn't, it sometimes has a funny flavor to it. So I'm going to read to you a line of his where he doesn't draw the historical distinctions. Like this. What shall I say to my brother, the Jew? Shall I give him dinner? So shall I invite him to dinner? Yes, provided that during the meal, Balaam's ass does not take it into its head to bray, that Ezekiel does not mix his breakfast with our dinner, that a fish does not come to swallow one of the guests and keep him in his belly for 3 days, that a serpent does not mix into the conversation to seduce my wife, that a prophet does not take it into his head to sleep with her after dinner, as did that good fellow Hosea for 15 francs and a bushel of barley. Above all, that no Jew take a tour around my house, surrounding with a trumpet, making the walls come down, killing me, my father, my mother, my wife, my children, my cat, my dog, in accordance with former usages of the Jew. So he lumped together Jericho, Hosea marrying Azona. What else was there? Yechezkel's breakfast cereal. Okay. Yonah and the whale. He got it all in one paragraph. Good. I'm sure the people who read this thought it was hysterical. Jews of every generation, as far as he's concerned, are tainted with the same defects as their forefathers. Voltaire mocks biblical prophecies about the future greatness of Israel. Why? They only had one tiny corner of the earth and just for a few years, and now they don't even have one village of their own. So this is a key point, by the way. It's a chutzpah, as far as he's concerned, that Jews think highly of themselves, that we never controlled the world. We were never the world empire. We had a little territory in the small corner of Asia, in the Middle East. And we lost that after a few years. And now we have nothing. We have Bupkis. We don't even have one village. So who do we think we are that they say that in future times we're going to rule a big kingdom?
Right. Isn't that the same as when Christians used to say, God has forgotten the Jew, they've gone the path?
So he's going a step further. Not just that God has forgotten the Jews. They never had their day in the sun. They were never great. Okay.
Now, well, what's interesting is, and we have this today also, the small percentage of the Jewish population has so much effect on the philosophy and the thought, negative or positive, of a million times more people.
Right. Okay. So that is, for those keeping the score at home, Norman just said that the small percentage of the population, namely the Jews, have an outsized influence over the religious thinking and other thinking of millions and millions and millions of people way beyond our own population, whether in the religious realm, in terms of daughter religions of Christianity and Islam, or even in the political thought or economic thought in the last two centuries. So, yeah, it's true. And on that basis, a lot of Jews take a certain measure of pride that we play this outsized role. Now, it can sometimes bite us because people can hate us on account of it. But it's true, and it can't be denied. Voltaire, however, was living in the 1750s and 60s before the non-religious component of that was true. That's more of a modern era concern. But you're right, at least the religious issue, there are daughter religions of Judaism. So the Jews did play an outsized role. Voltaire not only projected biblical era flaws onto contemporary Jews, he also retrojected contemporary Jewish flaws back onto biblical era Jews. So it goes both ways. And the desire for money and world power is retrojected onto the biblical heroes of the past. Now, you can do this, you can get away with this when there is no periodization, when it's all one thing lumped together and you don't draw any lines. Okay, Voltaire had several dealings with Jews that didn't go very well. So there's always some personal story that can help explain things, but only partially help explain things. In 1726, in London, he had an issue with a loan with a Jew. And in 1750 at Potsdam. However, his animus predated even the 1726 episode, because in 1721, he was already writing nasty things about us.
He probably had to go borrow money.
Maybe, I don't know. Now, he regarded Jews as aliens liable to commit treason for a price. They have an anachronistic tradition devoted to their brethren in the extreme and hostile to all others. So here he's picking up on the old misanthropy tradition from the days of the Greco-Roman writers. They love their own, but they hate everybody else. And they won't do a kindness, a chesed, for anyone. Well, that's business. That's business. Nothing personal. It's only business. Okay, now, dishonesty in trade and a whole lot of usury. Voltaire maintained that all the anti-Semitic baggage of his upbringing, he maintained all the anti-Semitic baggage despite dropping the theological components. So basically, he's able to divorce himself from the religious beliefs of his father, his grandfather, though his predecessors, but he held on to the disdain for the Jew. How do you do that? You find a way. When you really want to, you can find a way. Okay. Lishma, yeah. Now, he replaces it with what I would argue and what Jacob Katz argues is a racist component. The theological component is gone, but arguably a racist component is in play. Others will disagree, and we'll get to that in the minutes we have left, who disagrees with Katz's assessment. Now, Voltaire was able to simultaneously abandon Christian tradition while preserving this negative attitude towards the Jews. He did not have a radical social political agenda. He didn't oppose the monarchy. He didn't oppose the nobility. He just wanted protection of individual rights in the spirit of humanism and the decline of the power of the church. He was an aristocrat in the sense that he thought the masses would always be superstitious. You're not going to win over the masses to chachma, the way he would define it. But that the community of rational philosophers were the world's elite. Voltaire figured that the Jews would forever wallow in their ignorance among the masses, and that neither education nor political social emancipation would help them. How wrong he was. On this point, nobody could be more wrong, because what really happened in the post-Haskalah era, the Jew became the most prominent ethnic group in the universities, in the law professions, in the medical professions, in all the white-collar learned professions, and in the abstract philosophy as well. It became dominated by Jews. And yet he thought in the 1750s, no, they'll always be among the unwashed masses. And they may or may not preserve their religious differences. He figured they eventually would drop that. They would blend in and assimilate, but they would always be idiots and ignorant fools.
He was one of the, they called them philosophers.
Yes.
He had a whole group. And that, at that era, there were tons of guys like that. I won't mention the names because I don't remember them. But what were his contemporaries? How did they look at things? Did they just follow suit with what he said? Or did they disagree with
him? So plenty of people disagreed. Now, in his early life, that was the John Toland era. Later in his life, that was the Mendelssohnian era with Jan Michaelis and Wilhelm von Dohm. And those conversations happened just after Voltaire died. And those happened mostly in Germany, in the Germanic lands, or the Abbe Grégoire. Voltaire was in between the earliest phase of rationalist thought and the really heavy duty phase, which happens right around the time of the French Revolution or the decade before the French Revolution. So not everyone thinks like him. Not everyone was as hostile to religion. He was extraordinarily hostile. The others might have had some theistic tendencies, but didn't like the power of the church. Everybody had their own shita that was somewhere along the spectrum. No, I don't think he was molested. I think it was just he had an epiphany of some kind. Okay, so now talk of Jewish emancipation had not progressed much in Voltaire's lifetime. He's born 1694, dies in 1778. He knew only of one enlightened Jew, Isaac Pinto, meaning all the proto-Maskilim of the pre-Mendelssohnian era. He didn't really know these guys because there weren't that many of them, but he knew one, Isaac Pinto, because Pinto attacked the encyclopedia that Voltaire wrote, because Voltaire badmouthed Jews as being uneducated, unsophisticated, unlettered, and backward. And Pinto said, you're wrong, that among the Sephardic Jews, at least, we do have educated people. Now, by implication, what does he think about Ashkenazim? That they're a bunch of backward losers, okay? Now, if one buys into Voltaire's dismal assessment of the Jews and also takes away the Augustinian notion that the Jews have to survive as witnesses to the truths of Christianity, and you take away the Pauline desire to eventually convert the Jews, that they'll eventually see the light and accept Jesus, then what do you do with the Jews? Remember, the Augustinian and Pauline reasons to keep the Jews around kept them around, okay? Except where it didn't, where they got expelled. But at least in theory, in some parts of Europe, it kept the Jews around. If you don't need that anymore because you're a deist and you think the Jews stink, so what are you going to do with them? Now, what is the most aggressive possible answer? Genocide, a genocide. What is the most sort of laissez-faire answer? Leave them alone and whatever happens, happens. So interestingly, Voltaire doesn't offer much of an answer. He rejected naturalization, at least as far as England was concerned, and he briefly floats the idea of Zionism, but only very briefly, and it's like a pie-in-the-sky dream as far as he's concerned. Voltaire mentions an answer in the context of what you would do to the gypsies. Uh-oh. Now, once I say gypsies and Jews in the same context, you immediately think Nazis and death camps. But no, the truth is he never really gave an answer as to what should happen to the Jews in terms of government policy. He assumed, and we'll see, that they're just going to assimilate and blend in. So he noted that the gypsies are descended from Egyptian and Aryan pagans and Assyrian pagans. They are sorcerers and augurers who can no longer make a living because people are wising up to their shtusim, that the tarot card readings are no longer getting you $5 a shot. So because they can't make a parnassa anymore, the gypsies are a problem. But Voltaire predicted assimilation for the Jews, and I'm going to read to you what he said. Like this. The same catastrophe can befall the Jews when the society of man is perfected, when every people carries on its trade itself, no longer sharing the fruits of its work with these wandering brokers. The number of Jews will necessarily diminish. The rich among them are already beginning to detest their superstitions. They will be no more than a lot of people without arts or laws, who are no longer able to enrich themselves through our negligence, will no longer be able to sustain a separate society, and will no longer understand the ancient corrupt jargon, a mix of Hebrew and Syrian, ignorant even of their own books, will assimilate among the scum of the other peoples. The scum of the other peoples. So what he's saying actually was right on target. If he was wrong about education and emancipation having an impact upon the fate of the Jews, he was very wrong about that. He was very right about this. What is he saying? That religion among the Jews is going to go into steep decline. They'll be illiterate. They'll be ignorant of their own religious traditions. And if society no longer needs them to play a particular economic role, then they'll be swallowed up. That they survived, in his quasi-Marxist interpretation of Jewish history, he thinks they survived not because of a commitment to Torah or mitzvos. They survived because the Christians, in their own negligence, in their own stupidity, kept the Jews going because the Christians wouldn't engage in usury and money lending. So there was a place in the economy, a necessary place, that had to be filled. It was filled by the Jews. But once that's no longer a niche carved out for them because other people will do trade, other people will do money lending, well, then they'll blend in and they'll forget their own religion and they'll be gone. So was he right or was he wrong? Well, basically, if you take away the 10% of world Jewry that is, you know, Shabbos observant, he was right. He was right. Okay,
he was
so
wrong on the education
part. He was wrong on the education part.
He's one of those
We don't have to get into that. Okay, now. So as far as he's concerned, the Jews exist only so long as their services are needed. When they're no longer needed, the basis for the existence will disappear, and the Jews would blend into the scum, where they already belong as far as he was concerned, but the religious differences between the Jewish scum and the Gentile scum will now no longer exist, and they'll all be one biyachad. Okay. Not too many. There were some court Jews in Central Europe, and there were some very wealthy Jews in England among the early returnees to England, but not too many, not too many.
So you think that most of the Jewish population was rabble?
Sure.
And as rabble, they probably were instrumental in 1789 then.
Okay, so Jews didn't play much of a role, if anything, in 1789, but they had a great deal to gain from the success of 1789. It didn't happen immediately. First, it was the emancipation of the Sephardim, Bordeaux and Bayonne, and then the emancipation of Alsace-Lorraine, 1791. So the Jews are on the sidelines because they're afraid to participate in everybody else's battles. But from an economic point of view and a political point of view, yeah, there was what to gain. Okay, now let's go to... No. Let's now go to the opinion, not of Jacob Katz, who I've been quoting at some great length in his book, but Harvey Chizik, who wrote an article titled Ethics and History in Voltaire's Attitude Towards the Jews. So was Voltaire an originator of modern anti-Semitism? Arthur Hertzberg, who was the dean of all these discussions on Jews and the French Revolution, saw Voltaire as the key link between Christian anti-Semitism of the medieval variety and modern racial anti-Semitism. So Hertzberg likes to dump on Voltaire. He says, terrible. But since Voltaire said both good and bad things about the Jews, the best way to examine what he, you know, his opinion is to see how other people in subsequent generations understood Voltaire and what was the case. So Voltaire is very often cited by detractors of the Jews, but is never cited by sympathizers with the Jews. Now, does that prove anything? Not necessarily, but it's leading in a certain direction. If you want to say something nice about the Jews, you're not going to quote Voltaire. If you want to say something unpleasant, you have what to quote from him. Okay, so maybe it's unfair to say that he's guilty of anti-Semitism that did not yet exist in his time. Maybe the later writers just conveniently cherry-picked from his works because there was what to cherry-pick. Now, Voltaire said, morality is one. It comes from God. Dogmas differ. They are ours. What does that mean?
But he doesn't believe it.
No, there's a perfect God, and he runs the show. Screwed it up.
Correct. That there is some kind of a creator deity, and he infused within us a sense of what's right and wrong. And to the extent that we impose dogmas on upon ourselves, we did it, not him. Okay, so
the Jews did an exception.
Exceptionally bad job. Right. So Voltaire valued politeness, learning, elegance, and liberality of the elite. He wrote favorably of the Chinese, the Japanese, the Hindus, and deism. But Voltaire and his universalism was not inclined to like the ancient Israelites of the Bible. And for a particular reason. It's because the Jews are a particularistic tribe that doesn't get along with its neighbors. And Voltaire likes when you're goodly, when you're kindly disposed to your neighbors, when you're not so parochial. Now, unlike Rousseau, who thought Moses was a favorable character and elevated Moses in some kind of a pedestal, Voltaire did not approve of laws designed to separate Hebrews from other peoples. He opposed the slaughter of the Canaanim, and especially opposed the slaughter of those who worshiped the Egel HaZahav. How many were killed with the Egel HaZahav episode? 3,000, Shlosh Alfim. He says, how could they kill such people? It wasn't right. And he regards the fanaticism of that episode to be on par with the fanaticism of the church. So he's using the Old Testament episode to say something unpleasant about the church. Okay, but somebody wrote it. Somebody believed in it. Whether it happened or didn't happen doesn't matter to him. Now, large-scale suffering and loss of life goes against enlightened values. So in this respect, he commends the Romans for their tolerance and the Muslims for their tolerance. What kind of Muslim tolerance? Well, we haven't really spoken about the Muslim world and anti-Semitism. I'm not sure I'm going to address that topic at all in this course. I don't know yet. But there was this theory around in the 18th century that Muslims were more tolerant than Christians were. Does it have a kernel of truth? Yeah, vis-a-vis the Jews, the dhimmi status of the Jew in the Islamic world wasn't good, but it may have been marginally better than getting killed in a crusade. Okay. Do what is right. Don't follow non-utilitarian commands from a so-called deity. That's Voltaire's approach. He believed in the power of big battalions, you know, big armies. Kochi ve'otzem yadi. The Torah says, if you say kochi ve'otzem yadi, what happens? God gets angry with you. But Voltaire says, no, that's exactly how the world works. Might doesn't make right, but might wins. So he didn't like the myths in the Bible and in post-biblical Judaism of, I'll quote Al-Hanisim, Rabim biyad me'atim, the many in the hands of the few. As far as he's concerned, that must be a myth. That could never have happened. That's not the way the world works. So also, he thought that the Hebrews were patently unheroic, having been bailed out by God at the Red Sea. So here he doesn't believe in miracles, and he doesn't like Yamsuf, but he wants to trash the Jews because they relied on the Ribono Shel Olam to save them out of the Yamsuf episode.
But it's the reliance that
he's... It's the reliance that he's trashing, correct. Yeah. That they couldn't defend themselves and fight back against the Egyptians. So salvation through divine agency is really anathema to him. Voltaire was anti-militaristic, but he did not approve of cowardice and military incapacity. The Jews were politically inferior and culturally backward. They borrowed their creation myth from the Hindus belief in angels from the Chaldeans and their various rites, including bris, as I mentioned, from the Egyptians. Voltaire accused the Israelites of being crude imitators and not very discriminating in what they adopted. In other words, if you're going to borrow from the Goyim, borrow the good stuff. Don't borrow the Mishigasim. And what did they borrow? They borrowed all the lowly rites and rituals. Okay. Voltaire was consistent in his opposition to mass killings and as a political tool in antiquity. He doesn't use it as a cudgel only to attack the Jews. So this is what I said about there's no double standard. Anybody who behaved badly in the past was regarded as inferior, and that we've progressed beyond that, and we should look back at the past and say, shame on them. Not just the Jews, but everybody else. Had it just been the Jews, we could say he was a double standard, but then he doesn't do that. He criticized Avraham's... mostly against the church, mostly against the Roman Catholic Church. So Voltaire criticized Avraham's travels to Gerar. Why? Because he had to give up his wife a second time. What, one time wasn't enough? Okay, and Voltaire chooses to conveniently ignore Avraham's more favorable episodes, like when he pleads with God to spare the Sodomites. In other words, justice, haftispet tzadikim rasha, and Voltaire ignores tzedek tzedek tiradof. So Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wouldn't have liked it. Now, it appears that Voltaire went out of his way to avoid finding ethical merit in the Hebrew Bible. If he wanted to find it, he could have found it. He chooses to focus on those stories that make us look bad.
The Ten Commandments didn't go into his lexicon?
I guess not.
Because that's just the quintessential.
Of course, you're right. And yet I haven't mentioned it once. Voltaire was against abuses, but he did not put much stock in social justice. As an aristocrat, it didn't bother him that there was an underclass that suffered. The Torah excels Bedafka in social justice. Ger, Yatom, Ve, Almana. So to Voltaire, those are the riffraff. It doesn't impress him that the Torah is protecting the underclass. Voltaire missed the humane aspects of the Mosaic Code. He also missed, as I mentioned, the moderating influence of the Talmud, to which he was instinctively hostile. But then again, pretty much everybody in Europe who wasn't a Jew was instinctively hostile to the Talmud. He did criticize medieval persecution of Jews, not so much out of mercy for the victims, but in condemning the fanaticism of the perpetrators. How do you like that? So, Baruch Hashem, he didn't like the medieval persecutions, but not because our people suffered, but because the people doing taking the action were acting inappropriately. They went, they did something they shouldn't have done. Okay, well.
But the same MO that most of these people have. You might have, like the Nazis, the Mao. They would kill like nothing, but yeah. For the animal, they went out and they
saved them. Yeah, okay. Now, interestingly, Voltaire praised the Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire from the Shabtai Tzvi episode. Why? Because the episode ended without a loss of life. Meaning, it was a good thing that he forcibly converted Shabtai Tzvi and arranged for the outcome that ultimately took place, because it could have been a mass revolution and everyone descending upon Eretz Yisrael and horrible killings in an attempted bringing back to life of the Jewish state. No, the guy did good. Nobody died. Nobody died.
Did anything he write anti-Semitically incite pogroms, murder?
Not in his own time. Not in his own time, no. Now, Voltaire saw the Spanish expulsion as a means of expropriating Jewish property, but thought that the Jews largely brought it upon themselves. Why or how? They pillaged the state with usury and threatened to take it over. So here Voltaire is saying, I'm not calling for the expulsion of the Jews, and it wasn't necessarily the nicest thing, and there was some venal motives to the whole thing, but they might have had it coming. Okay, now how could Voltaire sometimes say that the Jews deserved better treatment on the basis of fundamental human rights, and at other times say they deserved to have a pariah status? So the answer is he was a better moralist than he was a historian. His abstract morals were pretty good, but the way he read the past and the way he trashed the Jewish heroes of antiquity and the Jewish behavior of more recent times, and even of contemporary times, as far as he was concerned, was not very fair, and always with a thumbs down. And so that's what poisoned him against our people, not because he didn't have any universal values. He did. So Voltaire had no recommendations for what should happen to the Jews, which is something central to modern anti-Semitism. So if we're going to say that he was a granddaddy of modern anti-Semitism, it's hard to say that because he didn't call for their persecution, for robbing them of their political rights, although in his lifetime they didn't have so many political rights, and he didn't call for any physical persecution. So Katz would argue, and Hertzberg would argue, that this is not step one, and maybe step two or step three, along the path towards eventually getting to Wilhelm Marr and Adolf Stocker and Karl Luger and Adolf Hitler. But we're not there yet.
He was very much against the killing and the militaristic killing.
Right.
So he was a great friend of Catherine the Great, who was always at war with the Ottomans. It seems to be a double standard.
So Voltaire is not perfect, and he had his political preferences in the realm of international relations, no doubt about it. I'm not here to defend him in the least. It's just a question of, to what extent do we want to connect him, to tie him to that which follows? Because what follows is a lot uglier than what existed in his time. And what follows shortly after his lifetime was actually a major improvement. In other words, we go from the unemancipated Jew of his lifetime to the emancipated Jew of Western and Central Europe to eventually whole-scale genocide. What are we going to connect him to? The answer is a lot or a little, depending upon how you want to read it. Now, next time... Yeah. Yes, but a very important one at that. We can't. Yeah. Okay. Gideon.
In which he lived.
Right.
Jews are living in abject poverty and squalor. They're viewed as backward Neanderthals.
Yeah.
It's very common for you know, all levels of society to have negative feelings of Jews.
Yes.
Revolutionary idea of trying to place organized religion in a much more diminished way.
Yeah.
So in that world, he's kind of like Lahavdil Noah, where in his generation,
Tony Mayabadorotov,
probably with every non-Jewish.
Okay, so for those at home, what Gideon is saying is that in Voltaire's own time, most people had a dim assessment of Jews. So he's not making any chidushim in that regard. He's espousing what everyone else is. His chidush is that we're gonna downgrade the role of organized religion in public life. So I think the reason why the 20th century scholars, especially in the second half of the 20th century, the Jewish scholars, whether at Columbia University or Hebrew University or wherever, wanted to tie Voltaire to subsequent modern anti-Semitism is because he could have, in light of him jettisoning the theological component, he could have really turned the corner and brought us to a place where the Gentile world or the philosophical subset of the Gentile world is pushing whole hog for Jewish emancipation, absolute equality. The fact that he doesn't, because of what are amounting to secular reasons, strikes us very negatively, because secular reasons, especially if you impute them as being permanent, negative traits in Jewry, we know is followed up by very, very bad physical persecution. So even if he never had that in mind, you can easily connect the dots. And what he could have done, he didn't do. He was not like Christian Wilhelm von Dohm saying, let's give the Jews all sorts of rights and they will improve. He's saying Jews stink. They always have. We used to hate their guts because they killed Jesus and we believe Jesus was a messianic godlike figure. We don't believe it anymore, but they're still just as terrible. So that's what bothered the Jewish historians in recording, the history of the 18th century. Okay, we'll stop here and see you folks next week. All right, take care, guys.